called Black Beauty. It was written by no other than Duke Ellington. It was written for this woman who, if you don't know her, I just learned all about her. Her name is Florence Mills, and she was the Michael Jackson of her time. I mean, people loved Florence Mills. She was a singer, dancer, performer, and actually she died of exhaustion, Vanessa, in her, I think, late 20s or 31. I think she died at 31. And like tens of thousands of people came to Harlem for her funeral. And Duke Ellington wrote that song for Florence Mills. And the reason I chose it to play today is because the reason why Baby Esther, who we are dedicating today's walk to, became famous is because when she was 4 years old, they was like, this is the next Florence Mills. This is the next Michael Jackson. And at 4 years old, she just hit the circuit. So let's talk about it. But before we do, I just want to say hi. Let's say welcome. I want to say shout out to all my actual homegirls who's walking. I want to say out to all the new women who walk in, who gonna soon be my homegirls. And I want to say hi to you, Vanessa, who's been my homegirl for far too long.
First of all, Morgan, when you were saying that, is it Florence Mills? Is that the woman's name who Duke Ellington wrote the song about?
Yes.
You were saying she died of exhaustion, I was like, I'm going to need the CDC to start tracking Black women's deaths by exhaustion like they tracked this COVID-19, because that's an epidemic right there. And it needs to be designated on somebody's medical forms around, like, no, never mind all the underlying conditions. I'm just fucking exhausted and I lay down right here in this moment.
No, it actually says in her biography that she had done a 300-spot tour, and she just came down with like pneumonia or something. She was exhausted. Her body was just too taxed and she didn't make it.
Yeah.
She didn't make it. And that's really also slow down. This is the moment to slow down. Let's do that. Oh, let's walk in slow motion. Ready? Let's slow down.
I just was reading Thich Nhat Hanh right before. He was like, walk as your feet are kissing the earth.
Yes, let's do it. Hold on. This is what a true meditation is. It is being absolutely, so stop where you are. Let's just actually take a breath in through your nose. Out. Let's take one more breath in through your nose. This time say, ah. And one last one, because we like three. And say, ah. And before you take one step, just pay attention to what is around you. What sounds do you hear? What do you feel on your skin? What do your eyes lay on? What do you feel? What do you hear? What do you smell? Now I want you to feel the earth beneath your feet. How you are held by the earth. And if you start feeling anxious of walking, don't. Just stand there and be held by the earth. And now we are going to take one step forward as if our feet are kissing the earth purposefully, knowing that you are displacing rocks, that there may be tiny little animals that you just want to avoid if you can, knowing that we are doing our level best every single day. And now you can speed walk up. Ooh, it feels good. Mm-hmm. And you can walk at your regular old pace. But people do walking meditations for hours. It is so beautiful. And actually, there's a great story, Vanessa, of when Thich Nhat Hanh, if you don't know who he is, he was a Buddhist monk who was a civil rights icon. He was good friends with Dr. King, and he's a philosopher and really, really, really powerful around meditation. But Vanessa and I are on faculty.
And if you say it, and if you say it Thich Nhat Hanh like I do, don't worry. Morgan got the right pronunciation. Follow her lead.
Follow her lead. I'm probably saying it wrong too. Listen, I'm from Wichita. You know, I don't know how to speak that. So Vanessa and I are on faculty at a place called Omega Institute. It's fancy. And they host people like him and all these other like world spiritual leaders. And there's a really famous story at Omega about Thich Nhat Hanh coming to Omega and she's walking real slow everywhere. And the faculty was looking at him like, what is he doing? Where is he going? And so somebody asked him, he's like, what are you doing out there when you're doing that? And he just looked up and he said, I'm walking. And they were just like, it was so saying that, like, he was so present at every step he took. He wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't doing anything. There was no name for it. He was just present with every single step he took. And that kind of radical presence is what is required sometimes when you're going through life, that you don't have to be anything or be anybody who you are not in this moment. But anyway, we digress.
And Morgan, can I share? I'm going to share a quick resource. I'm going to share a quick resource because this is how we got in this conversation. Yes. Just an hour ago, Lori Harris is a part of the Girl Trek community. She emailed me an article by Thich Nhat Hanh, How to Eat a Tangerine. And it was so good. And that's, and he's talking about what you're talking about. So Google it, y'all, and read that article. It's really good.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So listen, y'all, there are so many Black women who we could talk about on 21 Days. And it is downright political who we choose, okay? I mean, our staff don't wait at everybody, right? And who is this person named Baby Esther or Esther Jones? And why is Morgan talking about her today? Well, I tell you, I just saw this little headline one time that Betty Boop, the cartoon, was really Black. And I was like, come on now with it. Come on now with it. Now, let me hear about Betty Boop. Okay. I always knew it kind of seemed slightly racist, but I was just like, tell me about Betty Boop. So I Googled Betty Boop Black and Esther Jones came up. And it was an adult picture of her. So I assumed that she was an adult. And then I read about this woman named Helen. And Helen was a singer, right? A white singer, vaudeville singer. And Helen sued the whole cartoon company because she said that Baby Boop was stolen from her. Now, granted, Baby Boop does look like her. And I was like, okay, give her money. Give Helen her money. Don't take her stuff. She sued for $250,000. She told them they had to stop producing Baby Boop and that's her phrase. Don't ever use it again. In court, and it was a very public court case because she was popular at the time, this singer. In court, the way that they won is they was like, hold up. But let me just tell you, Helen, you stole the whole act and even the catchphrase boo-doo, boo-doo, boo, from a little girl who was 9 years old from Chicago, and her name is Baby Esther. Now, Baby Esther was a worldwide sensation, but she was not a sensation in America because she was Black. But in France, she was at the Moulin Rouge. She was performing for the King of Spain. She was all up in Central America. She was the highest paid child actor at the time. But then she was starting to age a little bit. She was like 11 or 12 years old. And her manager was like, well, she's a little girl, cute no more. She aging out. You know what I mean? Like, so they brought her back to Harlem. And when she was at Harlem, her manager brought Helen to observe her act, study her boo-doo-boo-doo, and Helen stole it and overnight became a success. Okay? Overnight. Became a success with this woman, she was a young girl at the time, and she did a whole act on Baby Talk, and she was like, and she was just like, put our little stuff up. So listen, y'all, they won the case, and they said they could not find Esther to bring her in for the case so she could get her dividends, her royalties. They could not find her for the case. So we don't know what happened to Esther. We know that she became a background dancer at one point. So she went from the highest paid actor in the world, just like child actors all across history have done. And then she really actually suffered. They don't know what happened. There's been lots and lots of confusion that she was maybe this blues singer who had a really terrible heroin addiction and went into all this stuff. Or maybe she was this woman from Shuffle Along. But actually, the real Baby Esther, she became a background singer, and then she kind of faded into obscurity. So that is the story of her, and it was really fascinating to me, mostly because I didn't know who she was. I didn't know she was this global sensation. And then I had so many questions of, like, Black genius. Like, what are we doing to Black girls? Why did her parents let her, at 4 years old, work that hard? It reminded me of Michael Jackson. The playlist is lit, okay? The playlist today is lit because it's all the child stars, including Beyonce, who just be breaking it down, who got that work ethic. But my first question to you, Vanessa, let's talk about Black labor. Let's talk about the labor of Black women. And I want to know, how old were you when you got your first job?
And this is real. My great-grandmother had, Lord have mercy, I'm going to say this wrong too. I'm going to say Alzheimer's. Look, y'all, because I'm the Black girl I am. I know it's something different now, but I called it Alzheimer's. My great grandmother had Alzheimer's, and she came to live with us when I was 13 years old. And at 13 years old, because every other person in our household worked, and my great grandmother needed round the clock care, me and my cousin Rhonda became her full time caregivers. We were certified. We bathed her in the morning before school, fixed her breakfast, came home at lunch, cleaned the room, got her ready, dinner. Every day, I was a home nurse aide at the age of 13.
See? Yeah, I started working at 14, I think, because I think I got a car at 14 and a half, and I had to because I had to take myself everywhere. You know, I was a grown woman.
Your mama had things to do. Let me call you out. First of all, everybody, Morgan was that child. She had to go to saxophone lessons. She had to go to soccer. She had to go to the Black Panther Youth Party meeting. She had to go on over here to the Girl Scouts and earn her badge. Her mama didn't have time to be driving her all around.
My mama was a telephone operator. Okay, she was a telephone operator at the hospital. She used to get on the bus. It'd be snowing everywhere. Listen, my name is Zora Baby Neal Hurston. I was trying to get in where I fit in. That's all I'm saying. And shout out to the allies. Peggy Porto, who lived around the corner from my auntie, who we had to live with, was a white lady who was like, you ain't going out like that. So shout out to the allies.
You know,
the Girl Scouts. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And Morgan, on the real, I want to say this because I had this reflection last night and it's kind of connected. It seems like a tangent, but it's not. And I'll be quick. I was frying me a snack yesterday, some red snapper, and I was feeling real black and grown because I'm like, only grown people make red snapper for a snack.
Hold on. You don't fry you a snack. That's just erasing.
But let me explain. And I had a flashback. I had a flashback to when my grandmother, when I was in the third grade living in Seattle, Washington, made fried fish plates for all of my teachers and brought them up to the school, and I was mortified. I was mortified.
Oh, no.
So even when I think of all the times that I was disappointed that one of my family members didn't come to my play, didn't go to my debate thing, didn't do this, but I know that they were actually working on behalf. Right now, I'm just asking God for forgiveness for those thoughts in that moment,
God,
for the lack of appreciation that I had as a young black girl. I am sorry, God.
Listen, forgive her, God. Forgive her. Forgive her. Yeah. So my point is we've been working since we've been working. And oftentimes at the expense of our childhood, really. I mean, I was working telemarketing. It was like a sweatshop. And it was all black kids.
Oh my God.
Down in the basement, working telemarketing like a sweatshop. I'm not even kidding. And I would argue that most of my friends started working. Even Vanessa and I, if you don't know about our story, met at a job when we were working time. I'm talking 40 hours a week. And going to college full time at good schools. We went to good schools, you know what I mean? In Los Angeles. And I'm saying, like, that amount of labor is too much. I've been thinking, how many hours a week do you work? Like, what right now? Is it 40 hours a week? Is it 50 hours a week? I'm talking about during Corona. Is it 60 hours a week? Are you doing billable hours because you're a lawyer? Like my homegirl Kanika, you doing 70, 80, 90 hours a week. Like, let's make a sister pledge right here in the spirit of baby Esther and Florence Mills, that we're going to start to ratchet this back, that the world cannot have our labor. They cannot have our energy. They cannot have our childhoods. They cannot have our charisma at this scale. That we're going to hold some of it to ourselves. I'm telling you, it is like muscle memory overworking. I mean, Vanessa and I are the leaders of Girl Trek, and we be acting straight up plum crazy, and shout out to our staff, and I am sorry. It is like muscle memory that we have
sorry.
To just like...
Don't quit. We love you.
It's almost like a walking meditation where we have to be here now. We have to say, okay, today is Tuesday. We're here now. All right, tomorrow is Wednesday. We're here now, as opposed to shooting for stars, going over here. We got to shoot the plan, wrap the brain around. You know what I mean? We can really be like that. It's crazy. It's crazy. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about.
Morgan. I was thinking, you remember Miss Juanita from In Living Color? Remember she had all the jobs?
You
can't be Miss Juanita no more.
I was also thinking about Personal Magic. On the Living Color, somebody, and it was like a stage mom. I was like,
you know what? Those are the remote. That's our assignment. if you are in a mood where you just need some joy in your life, you need to seek out your episode of In Living Color on YouTube, Netflix, wherever it might be, and just remind yourself, because that was some peak Black genius right there.
No,
and
yeah,
actually, and your point, Morgan, and the Wayans family, even was it the Wayans family who did this? Let me know. And the Wayans family themselves, they're actually a perfect example, even around the conversation of like community wealth and how they help. Like, they're just so dope. Yeah.
And Robert Townsend, shout out to Robert Townsend. Go back and watch some old Robert Townsend movies. I was just thinking, but here's the next piece of the conversation, and I ain't kidding. Did her family ever get the $250,000 in reparations from whoever made that Betty Boop hoopie on everybody's t-shirts, still on lunchboxes and all kind of stuff? Did her family ever get Vanessa? I watched the documentary about the man who made the Lion King song. In the jungle, the jungle. It's a man in South Africa. His family was still living on dirt floors, girl. Do you know how many billions of dollars Disney done made off the Lion King? Give them their floor. Give them their money. So I'm saying, I have never been a vocal advocate of reparations, because I don't ask for nothing. And I just be too proud, and I'll be like, forget y'all. We don't need your little stuff. But I want baby Esther's family to have that $250,000 so bad. So I had a question for you. If we could snap and get some sense in the White House, and we all got $250,000 of legitimate reparations, what would you do with your reparations?
Oh, bam. I'm going to do some collective building of schools and childcare centers, where we create a village, pour into that village around starting to educate our children differently. I'm going to start to create a wellness center where Black women come from across the country and get time off, literally like an actual mansion of a house. Shout out to Sandra, who also is manifesting this idea. Come just take a sabbatical, Black women. That's what I'm doing with mine, because I'm good, right? So whatever reparations you're giving me, sister.
Your mansion is going to be raggedy for $250,000.
Morgan. Okay, well, fine. Take me to Ghana. How you know? Take me to Ghana. Teach me some real estate. I'm giving me a mansion for $250,000. Hell, people right now would come sleep on my couch if I said you could stay here for 1 year for free. You ain't got to pay no bills and just take a break. Let it be known, Black women, that we don't need no spas. We just need somebody to say, sister, I see you, and I am here to help you. But my mansion would be janky if it was in Washington, D.C., over Southeast, I might be able to give me something. Southeast D.C., stand up. We about to build over there, all right?
No. For the record, I did go look at a house today, and I did stand at the gate of some kind of retreat center that somebody's done abandoned up in the mountains today, this morning. That's why I came on the call. Too much information. And I'm saying, we going to manifest that. We going to manifest a retreat center. An omega for Black women that will
Morgan,
come and rest.
Sorry for interrupting. Seriously, I got a text message about this exact question, and hers was beautiful. I don't know who sent this to me. Renee in Columbus, Ohio. She said if she got reparation dollars, she would use them to get her and her Black son the hell up out of this country.
Woo! Yes, there's so many things I would do with $250,000. First of all, I might just use all of it to bail some people out of jail and pay their stuff so they can just never be stuck in that system again, because so many people stay in jail because of bail. So I might just, $4,000 or $5,000 of bail. I might just pay for the freedom of people who still do not have freedom in this country. I might invest in a portfolio of 5 or 10 really powerful, promising Black businesses to try to get some dividends so I can turn that $250,000 into $1 million so I can reinvest that. What else might I do? Just buy a whole stretch of land and figure out later. Do we get 40 acres? That's all. No, we don't.
I just walked by with these, just walked by this boy with these fly Jordans, and I was like, shoot, I'm gonna get some Jordans.
But
look, Black joy is resistant. For the record. And when you don't have healthcare, don't be having nobody shame you about having cable. Okay, because you just trying to find the joy that you can have where you can find it, Black people. This ain't no judgment for me. Look fly. And the world is trying to kill you every day. Show up and you'll fly yourself and say, try me, mother, try me.
Say it.
Sorry. That was
a tangent. Don't say that, but say
back on track.
And I think that Jordan got a pretty good deal, so we buy in black. So it's okay. I was proud of Nike for giving their employees Juneteenth off. See the article?
Me too. I think Twitter started it, but yeah. Everybody needs to get it off. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good. So please tweet us at hashtag Black History Bootcamp and tell us what you would use your reparations for in honor of baby Esther. Why did her parents let her do that for Vanessa? Do we be using our kids in order to get our old fame? That's all I want to know.
On Twitter. We be using, look.
On TikTok. Look. Come on. Come with it.
Look. No, we're just supremely talented, Morgan. Literally from a little age. We are just supremely talented. And if I had a kid, and she could tap dance and sing. I don't have one, but I'm going to be doing 1,000 hours of videos, and I'm going to have my own YouTube channel and my own age and be like, look what I did. I don't know.
Vanessa,
we just got a lot of talent bursting out of us.
You would be a Tina Knowles on 10. You already know you would be a small black little magic. You need to go ahead and get this a baby. This is actually a serious one. At first, I thought she was an adult, and I got mad because I was like, see, we are such like sexual, beautiful women, and like, it got stolen, like black sexuality or black female sexuality gets erased so much. And like, we are the sexiest cartoon. But then when I learned she was a little girl, I was just like, holy cow, what do we even do with that? What do we even do with that? And like, do we think black girls are over-sexualized? Do we think that we have a sexual possession of ourselves that can't be like understood through Western? And I'll tell you this, when I was in Cuba one time, I was on the beach and there was like a something happening on the beach, like a big community something. And this little girl was with her family and her mother and her grandmother. And she was, I'll just say twerking, but it was Cuban twerking. So it wasn't really twerking. It was something where she was like gyrating, moving down to the ground. She was like nine. She was getting it in. And her mama was like, yes, her grandma was like, and it was like a rite of passage. And it felt so beautiful, and I didn't understand it. It didn't reconcile.
You didn't understand it because literally since the first slave auctions in this country, black bodies have been over-sexualized. And it is this thing that even we have ourselves with our modesty politics have adopted and then projects back on to little black girls who are simply trying to live their very best little black girl life.
Yeah, absolutely. And express the fullness of who they are. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Fully expressing it. I'm not saying we're in danger, and I'm not saying being predatory. And I have some question. I had a video of a little girl in Harlem who had a little flapper outfit, and I didn't put it on YouTube because I was just like, I just want to protect little black girls, even if it's 100 years old. So I'm not suggesting that, but I'm suggesting that my judgment of that little girl in that moment is what we need to investigate. In ourselves.
Yes. Yes.
We really, really do.
Yes.
And yeah. I think it's just
Go ahead, Morgan.
I think it's just because I hadn't been liberated in those ways for reasons. And I there's a whole vocabulary I have around sin, around shame, around blame, around all sorts of things, around discipline, around.
But you know what, Morgan, I'm going to offer an additional perspective. I'm going to offer a different additional perspective. Those things are true and we must release our judgment. And what I know is happening because this happened in my household where black mothers are fearful for their black daughters. And so I can literally remember in eighth grade, I wanted to get this halter dress for the graduation. Mom was like, it ain't rolling like that here. Mom was fearful. She was fearful of the violence that also has been put on black women's bodies by white men, black men, white women, all sorts of folks. And so I do think some of it is also that. Yeah.
It's protection. It's a hard subject, but the one thing that I know for sure is that I want us to be safe and I want us to be liberated to be able to express those parts of ourselves, because here this woman is like taking what eventually became scat, what eventually became jazz, which is like the epitome of female just gorgeousness with like these slinky dresses on and like, you know, all of that, it really got co-opted at such a nascent stage. And I don't know, It just made me upset.
I actually,
the whole thing made me upset.
It makes me upset too. And as you were talking, I had this thought of this heartbreaking story that I learned when I was actually in researching Toni Morrison for this series. And Toni Morrison said that her father was like away working on a railroad or something. And so he had been gone for like months. And her mother had started to notice the boy circling her. And her mom actually, I'm actually getting choked up thinking about this. Her mom wrote her dad a letter and said, "We have moved to Ohio. You can follow or not," because she had to protect her girl.
Oh.
Those are the choices Black women have been making our whole lives, between staying in place with our families or finding physical safety. We've been making the choices around putting food on the table or having pleasure or joy. It has never felt like it's abundant, but I will say this, and this is a funny levity moment. 2 minutes before this call started, my phone battery was like, "No, you ain't having no call." But Morgan, I was like, the ancestors literally just saved me. They whispered, they was like, "You're going to be great today." And I literally was like laughing to myself. And I was like, that's the energy of now. I literally think the ancestors are whispering to all of us, "You're going to be great today. Don't, they ain't going to play you no more. Get these laws, get this stuff." Like, so I felt that energy. Want to share it out there right now. Like, we had to make such tough choices as Black women, but I believe that our foremothers and the choices they made prepared us for this time. I believe their prayers are covering us, and I believe they are literally walking right now as we are walking on the phone side by directing our steps.
Yeah, I agree. And I told you today was going to be Virgo day, because Virgos are having that discipline kind of charisma. I don't know if she was a Virgo. I know it, dude, but when I was thinking about the child stars who remind me of baby Esther, I was like, Michael Jackson, when he was a little baby, had so much charisma in his pinky that he was just undeniable. It's what you're talking about now. You guys have Virgo charisma. And then we got Beyonce, who, listen, on that whole homecoming thing,
She can't even contain it. Literally, if there is a Beyonce hater in the world, they are just a hater. If people cannot give that woman her props, like, I don't even, anybody who says she's not the GOAT, like, I just can't even entertain you.
Trevor,
I can't.
Yo, my cousin Trevor can't stand the Beyonce. He can't do. So, Trevor, I hope you listen to this. I hope you watch Homecoming and you just get that full anointing up on you. I just keep picturing this little girl who grew up to be just a lovely young woman. She was still performing at 11 or 12, just on the corners of the stage, looking at an audience who came to the Moulin Rouge to see this girl. And she had on her best outfit, her slumper, whatever, her flap of her feathers. And they said she was just the cutest thing on the planet. And they just ushered all the royalty out to see her. I can just imagine what starts to stir in her legs when she's about to go out there and give it to them. Listen, if you don't feel that in your life, get you some of that. Figure out a way for you to channel some charisma in your life and share it back out, because you have it. You have whatever magic they've been telling us we got. You have it, y'all. We all
Morgan,
have it.
So Morgan, so Morgan, yeah. Morgan. Yeah. God's working in this movement. I'm so excited. I be getting hyped. You know how I be getting hyped when I have a new idea and you be like, just calm down.
This is a good idea.
And I'm asking live on air. So you could just be like, no, okay, we ain't doing that. I just had an idea. So the boot camp is only 21 days, right? We're going to do 21 Black women in the month of June. But could we not add at least one extra day, maybe two extra days, for women to submit the stories for the women in their family if they think that it rises to the level, so that we could tell like an unknown story from our community? Because that would be good. I don't know how we're going to coordinate it, but I feel like it would be good.
No, I'm just saying, can we keep it to 21 days? Just shout out to the community. And can we use one of the days next week or the following?
This is why we're a partnership. This is why we're a partnership. And I hadn't thought about that little tricky part, but that was good. That's good. Yes.
Exactly.
See, I'll be going left. I'll be going left. Morgan be like, here's
this woman.
Morgan, you're my Harriet Tubman. You be like, here's the North Star. We walking this way. I got it.
Okay,
I'm good. Okay, yeah.
But what I'm saying is, they can also come on and talk to us about it, because y'all have some divine women, you know, in your own personal history.
Yes. I would love to hear. Yeah, we're going to definitely do this on one of the days. So stay tuned for more details so that we can figure it out. Yeah,
that's good. So we're at time, and I thought we could end with none other than one of the greatest child performers ever. Ebony, I hope you got my text. We're going to end here with Stevie Wonder. We love you. We can't wait to see. Oh, resting this week, catching up if you're just starting. If you walk 5 days again this week, stay tuned for another trophy for your trophy shelf. Invite other sisters. We can reach 100,000. We love you. Talk to you all soon.
And Morgan. No. Importantly, we take a break for the weekend. So practice self-care, please. And we will be back on Monday. On Monday with the boot camp. So take the weekend off, ladies.
All right. Thank you. Hit it, Ebony. DJ E.
Considered as being a genius of our time. Ladies and gentlemen, let you and I make him feel happy with a nice ovation as we meet and greet little Stevie Wonder. How about that?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, now we're going to do a song kicking from my album, The Jazz Soul of Little Stevie. The name of the song is called Fingertips. Now I want you to clap your hand. Come on.